Hello everyone and welcome to the A4G podcast. I'm here with Jack today and we're going to talk about different types of trading structure. Now Jack, why do you think we need to share the knowledge about trading structures?
Well, really it's something that you sort of come across straight away. So as soon as you join A4G, if you start in the tax department, then as you go through the tax collating, you're going to come across the different types of businesses that we deal with straight away. So we're not expecting you to know in great detail necessarily what a sole trader is, what a limited company is. You know, don't need to know it in great detail, but you need to have a rough understanding of what that type of business is and how it's set up. And
I have to admit, I'm sometimes worried our clients don't even know the difference.
Yes, I'm sure you're right.
When I sometimes say, what's your figures from your sole trade? And a client goes, my what? And you go, your business. And they go, oh, right, yeah, okay.
Yes. Everyone likes to call themselves a director, even if they're not technically a director. So if we start off with the most simplest trading structure then, which is a sole trader. So from a tax perspective, it's the simplest and the easiest to set up, and it doesn't need to be registered at company's house. So no real need to actually prepare a set of accounts. They can just complete a tax return. Do you deal with many sole traders?
Yeah, I've got a fair few actually. But I suppose they're not the most common trading type we encounter, are they, in the practice?
Not for our size of clients, really. Although there will be a few more joining us potentially from MJ Reed.
Yeah.
So, as I said, they don't actually have to prepare a set of accounts, but what they will do is put their figures onto their tax return. So if their turnover is under the VAT threshold, which is currently 85,000, they just need to put their income and actually just their total expenses onto their tax return. They don't even have to break down their expenses. If their turnover is above 85,000, that's when they need to actually break down their expenses, so between purchases, motor expenses, whatever it is. And then also they will need to complete the balance sheet section, so their bank balance, any money that they're owed, any money they owe to suppliers, that breakdown needs to go on there as well. So in terms of our clients, once they reach that threshold, we would probably then prepare a set of accounts in order to get those figures before we put them on the tax return. In terms of a sole trader as an actual legal entity, well, in itself, it is not actually a separate legal entity. So a sole trader is just one person and that business is them as an individual. So if that business was to actually fail, then that person would be liable for any debts they've incurred. You know, that could involve having to remortgage their home or even have their home repossessed if they actually owe money. Doesn't matter that it's part of their sole trade business, they would be personally liable to pay that. Don't know if Josh, if you've ever come across any of your clients that have actually
I think I've had some where they've had to close it down. I've thankfully never had a client who's had their house repossessed over a sole trade going down. But I've had a number of clients where they've been scared enough to want to transition from a sole trader to another trading entity. I suppose the other thing to note is about the tax position of a sole trader. Because it's simple, it actually doesn't have the lowest rates of income tax. Sort of used to very roughly be able to say the more simple the way of trading, the more tax you pay. So employees tended to pay the highest, then sole traders, and then limited companies. But it's not quite that simple anymore, and actually there's two sweet spots for a sole trader now. If you've not got very much profits, then a sole trade may be the most useful way to trade. But also if you've got really, really high profits and you draw all those profits, being the most important consideration, then actually a sole trader becomes quite lucrative again. I was doing some calculations the other week for a client who is a sole trader, trying to work out if it was worth them going limited, which we'll come on to in a minute. And it actually wasn't that clear cut as to if there should be a limited company or a sole trader, because their earnings were so high and so little of their profits were being retained in the business.
Right, okay, that's interesting. So that's a sole trader, so that's one person working on their own. So that the next type of structure we could have is a partnership. So when we talk about a partnership, we're just talking about an unincorporated partnership, which is effectively just two sole traders who decide that they want to work together, go into business together. And from that perspective, it's pretty much the same as a sole trader, apart from they would have to prepare a partnership tax return, which will then just show the same information as the sole trader on their own personal tax return, so their income and expenses, potentially the balance sheet, but then the partnership tax return will then split that profit or loss between the two partners, and they will then transfer those figures onto their personal tax returns. Something to be wary of in terms of partnerships, and that's actually that in an unincorporated partnership, all of the partners are equally liable for the business's entire debt. So that's what we'd refer to as being joint and several liability. So basically, you've got to be careful who you go into partnership with if it's an unincorporated partnership. So effectively, if you've got one partner who's not doing what they should be, you know, potentially racking up a load of debt, then unfortunately the other partner in that business or partners would also be responsible.
I've seen enough partnerships break up in terrible circumstances that you sometimes wonder if going into partnership with someone is actually more serious than getting married to someone sometimes. And it can be equally as hard to get yourself out of when things go wrong. So yeah, partnerships are between people who implicitly trust each other, I think.
And even we've seen some family partnerships, haven't we, which, you know, relationships can go sour quite quickly when business is involved.
Yes. Business amongst families is a very interesting area to be involved with, which obviously quite a few of our clients do have. But yeah, when you implicitly trust people, but you also in families, you tend to find they'll shout at each other quicker than people who have got that degree of separation by not being blood related.
So out of all of our clients, the close relationships and the family partnerships are probably the ones which more than any should have a partnership agreement in place, would you say?
I'd agree with that. I think every partnership should have a partnership agreement in place.
But they tend to be the ones which are most reluctant to take that step, because they set off thinking there's not going to be any problems because of the family.
But a partnership agreement is basically a legal document, but it's a document that sets out what two parties or more than two parties have agreed at the point where they've set out in business together. And usually it's a case of, if you agree that between you when you're all getting along, if for any reason you don't get along later, you have something to fall back on as your default position to resolve any issues. And the great thing about having that discussion and padding all those thoughts out are that you are less likely to actually have a dispute, because you've thought it all through. You know what the implications are. There's no grey areas to hide in and sort of hope for the best. But, you know, things like a partnership agreement will deal with what happens if someone dies, or what if someone can't work anymore, how much holiday entitlement are people entitled to. And, you know, some of these subjects are pretty horrible subjects to talk about. So naturally, people in business together don't talk about it.
No.
And so when something does happen, so say someone can't work as many hours in the business anymore, but they haven't ever discussed what the expectation of those hours was in the first place, they've got no leg to stand on to say, well, hang on, I think I now should have a slightly higher percentage of the profits of our business because I'm doing more of the work. And that then leads down a long path of a fallout if it's not dealt with in the right way.
Okay, so that's an unincorporated partnership. So as I said, no limitation of their liability, so all the partners are liable for the whole debt. So what if they still want to have a partnership, but they don't like that element of the unlimited liability? So the next structure they could look at then is a limited liability partnership. And that is actually a separate legal entity that is registered at Companies House. But in order to get that limited liability, there are some extra admin steps and legal requirements in order to give you that status. So the first one is, now a limited liability partnership would have to prepare a set of accounts that would get filed at Companies House, and elements of those accounts will be publicly available for anyone to go onto the website and have a look at. And also an annual confirmation statement, which just confirms who the partners are of that business, where its registered office is, just the basic details really. So that is an extra element that you have to do in order to secure that limited liability status. But from the tax side, Josh, it is then the same as a unincorporated partnership.
Exactly. So we'd say that it's transparent for tax. So a partnership and a limited liability partnership, in terms of how you report it to HMRC, are actually the same, in that a partnership doesn't pay any tax of its own. It's the partners within it that pay the tax on behalf of the business. So say you've got two people in it, the business makes £10,000, and it's got, say Jack and I were partners in it, and we were equal partners, then Jack would take £5,000 of profit and I would take £5,000 of profit to put on our tax returns. Now, whether we've actually been paid that £5,000 is another matter, but we would have to declare that on our tax returns based on the profits reported in the accounts. And as far as HMRC are aware, they don't really care whether it's an LLP or a partnership. They're effectively being taxed under the same rules, which is basically that Jack and I would be paying tax as individuals on our portion of those profits. And actually, this ties back into a sole trader, that really, once you get down to looking at one partner's tax return, the partnership section's completed, but really it just feeds into the same tax calculations as a sole trade would.
Cool. So in terms of their, I said their liability is limited. So in an LLP, that would be limited to the value of their capital account. So the way that we would treat capital accounts would be all any money that they've introduced into the business, plus any profit share that they're due, less any drawings that they've actually taken. And so it's effectively any undrawn profits would be the limit of their liability if that LLP was to go bust or stop trading and owe money to anyone.
That really is the benefit of a limited liability partnership. Give you the simplicity of a partnership, but with the extra layer of protection. So you find, I've sort of found as I've gone around, you'll see hotels and places like that are often an LLP, because then it gives a certain level of protection to the owners. Because what if someone fell over in the bathroom and sued them? Then you don't want to be just a partnership, because they could then come after your personal assets that are outside of the business. But if you're a limited liability partnership, you can still protect your own assets. The reason why I particularly say hotels is because actually LLPs have historically been very good for properties. Because they're transparent for tax, the properties effectively use personal rates of tax for any gains made when they're sold and things like that. So that transparency for tax purposes is very good, combined with the legal protection a limited liability partnership gives you, sort of gives you a bit of best of both, if we ignore the limited company equation for the moment.
And there's historically been quite a few different professions which have been unincorporated partnerships. So us as accountants, solicitors, vets.
Yeah,
and so LLPs came along in the year 2000, I believe.
Something like that. Yeah.
Memory's not so good on that. And then once they were introduced in the year 2000, then pretty much all of those professions quite quickly transferred their business into an LLP, to just to get that extra profession, not because there's any lack of trust. So I don't think we could say A4G that we changed to an LLP because the partners were concerned that liability, but just because, just of that added protection, really, not from each other, but from outside influences.
People like solicitors and vets and accountants had regulations on them in the past where they couldn't structure themselves how they wanted. They had to be personally liable for everything. But obviously that doesn't make a lot of business sense, because a lot of people want to sue lawyers. So they, when their deregulation happened, which actually was one of the most recent ones, then they started to go down the route of seeking out this limited liability. And it was surprising that vets were the same, but it's sort of, if you look back into history, these professional partnerships were always the very highly esteemed professions. So veterinary, legal, accountancy were actually up there with being a part of the clergy, so being a vicar or a priest or something. It put you in high standing socially. I mean, it's not the same today, is it? I mean, talk to any builders about us and they don't hold us in high esteem. So it's all changed. But that was part of that deregulation. And it was all the same thing, like, you know, accountants and doctors couldn't go and promote their services. Now, accountancy was then deregulated, so we could actually go and market stuff. But that all happened relatively recently.
Okay. So we've covered partnerships there. So the last one that we're going to cover is a private limited company. So companies which we'll see with either the word limited written after the name or the abbreviation LTD. So again, these are separate legal entities which are registered at Companies House. So they do have limited liability, but with a limited company, their liability is limited to the value of the shares that they've subscribed to. So the shareholders will pay for the share capital. So for many of our clients, the value of their shares is £1. They might have one share, they might have 100 shares. So let's just say they set up the business with a share capital, ordinary share capital, 100 shares worth £1 each. So that shareholder will pay £100 for those shares. They'll pay their £100 into the business bank account, take their shares. That would be the limit of their liability. So whatever happened to that business, the maximum that potentially they could lose and not get back would now be that £100.
So I think it's important to note at this point that there's a difference between a shareholder and a director. So when we've looked at sole traders and partnerships, you know, our terminology might change slightly. So a sole trader is the owner. A partnership, you'd call the owners partners. But in a limited company, we have these two terms, director and shareholder. And the two terms are not interchangeable. They are actually very separate roles. It's just that most of the time on our client base, they are one and the same person. So a shareholder, as Jack was saying, is someone who's bought the shares in the company. They've paid £100 in theory in to buy their shares, and that shows that they own the company. So when the company makes its money at the end, it goes, this is our profit, we can vote some dividends on that. The shareholder is the person who gets those dividends. Now, a director is the person who's managing the company. So the director is named on Companies House as this person is a director. And the director's roles are to safeguard the assets of the company and manage that company so that it achieves the objectives set by the shareholders within certain parameters of corporate governance. So the shareholder is the owner who says, this is what I want this company to do, but the director is the one who actually manages the company to do that. Now, the director is not remunerated by dividends, because the directorship is not the thing that gives them shares in the company, and dividends are only paid out on the shares. So a director traditionally would have a salary. So if we compare it to a PLC, which I think Jack might touch on in a minute, but a PLC being someone like BP, so it's a huge company and it has shareholders and it has directors. Now, the directors are the people who manage the company and have whacking great big salaries that the press like to criticise them for. The shareholders could be anyone. So you'll have some institutional shareholders, and there are many individuals who will own shares in BP. But that doesn't mean they control the company. It means that they potentially have the right to go to an AGM, But really, it just means they have a right to receive dividends, and the directors need to manage that company and maintain shareholder wealth. So it's a bit complicated, but the comparison is to say, do not think a shareholder and a director are the same person.
Thanks. And in terms of a tax perspective, so a limited company, as it's a legal entity in its own right for tax purposes, the liability falls on that business itself. So the limited company will actually pay what's known as corporation tax on any profits. And it's the company that's responsible for settling that liability. It doesn't fall on the shareholders or the directors personally. There might be some scenarios when that could be the case, but 99% of the time, the limited company is fully responsible for paying that debt. So that covers all four of the most common trading structures that we're likely to see. I've got a question for Josh as a principal advisor, and that is if I came to you, Josh, as a starting up my own business, but I haven't actually chosen what type of trading structure I was going to use, and I was coming to you for advice, how would you help me decide which of those four would be the most appropriate for me to use?
So, the million-dollar question, what structure? So, there are a number of questions I would have to ask you first. So, the questions would be, what are your expectations for the turnover and profits that you'll make in your business? What's your long-term intention for the business in terms of, will you need to get lots of staff in? Will you build up a business that you'd likely to sell? Or is it going to be a business that just generates a lot of cash that you can then use for investments? These questions all lead me down different paths to work out what's the best option. So generally, if you are running a business and your profits are about £30,000-£35,000 and you draw every single penny, then the likelihood is a sole trade might actually be quite a good option for you. It's cheap to run, it's not got all of the legal mumbo jumbo that a limited company has, and at about £35,000 of profits that you're drawing every penny of, you're probably in the right tax position. The tax compared to limited companies, you're probably about right. If you have a business where a lot of the money you generate in the business, you're keeping in the business to reinvest in the business. So to explain that, if you're running a business and it generates, say, £50,000 of cash in a year, but you only need to draw £35,000, and the rest of it you're using to keep the money in the business to fund growth. So say you're keeping 20 grand aside inside the business because you're going to recruit someone, you need to have money to pay their wages, or you've got some stock that you need to go and buy, or reinvest in machinery, you need some capacity in your finance to grow. That means that you're going to have £50,000 of profits to be taxed on, but you only really are seeing 35 of it. In that case, a sole trade and partnership are less good, because you're paying the highest rate of tax on your profits irrespective of if you've drawn it. With a limited company, the limited company pays a lower rate of tax on the profits, and then you as an individual only pay tax on what you draw. So the combination of that can mean it's a lot better if you're not drawing all the money out of your limited company. If you've got a limited company that's generating a lot of cash, so each year its cash balance is going up, that leaves you a lot of options for how you can invest that cash without recognising it on your personal tax return. So that's where I would then start to advise a limited company might be quite lucrative. So you'd then start seeing that this individual has got a pension or something like that, or might have multiple companies. But then there are other considerations to do with if you want to bring partners in, how you finance the company, if you've got property within the company, things like that.
So would you say that tax is the number one priority when clients come to you to decide how they should trade?
Probably is a key consideration. I mean, I always say don't let tax be the tail that wags the dog. But ultimately, yes, tax is going to have a massive bearing on which structure you use, because the tax rates between them could be very different. But what you're also going to need to do is put into that your plans, because income tax is not the only tax to be worried about. And I think a lot of accountants will naturally just go, oh, that one's the lowest income tax, be a limited company. But if you're not generating profits to that level, or you're not retaining a certain amount of profits, then actually a limited company might not be as beneficial as it would first appear, just based on the headline rates.
Okay. I've also, in the past, had a couple of clients, sort of two different ends of the spectrum. One where a limited company from a tax perspective would have been the best option, but actually they couldn't be bothered with all the hassle of the admin that actually comes along with it. They didn't want to be filing accounts at a company's house. They wanted to keep everything as private as possible, and they were willing to actually pay the extra tax in order to, that was their priority. So they chose that option. And actually I also had another client where remaining as a sole trader would have been the best option, but from their point of view, they saw having a limited company as being more attractive to the customers that they dealt with. They thought it showed them to be a larger business than perhaps they actually were. So it was more of a perception and a status reason that they wanted to have a limited company, despite, from a tax perspective, they were better off just remaining as a sole trader.
And some clients just want to call themselves director, as you said.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Okay, so we've had that initial meeting, you've advised me on the structure, so maybe I decided to stick as a sole trader for now because my profits are going to be quite low, it's a new business. But, you know, it all starts to go very well. Maybe I'm turning over 150,000, starting to make a decent profit margin on that. If I came to you to then discuss my structure again, am I able to change it?
Absolutely. Within reason, nothing is ever really set in stone. There is always going to be some sort of upheaval in changing your structure, but it's usually not as much upheaval as you would first fear. The only times when it can be inhibitive is if you've got a regulator who's particularly reluctant to change your registrations. So I've got a client who is in construction. They're quite a big contractor, and they've got registrations in their LLP. Now, ideally, I would recommend that they would now be a limited company, but it's so hard for them to get the registrations in the first place that they do not think it's possible to transfer those registrations to a new limited company, and therefore it could jeopardise their turnover. So in their case, they've stayed still because of the networks they're members of, effectively. And so that can be quite inhibitive. But for most businesses, transitioning from one structure to another is relatively easy, as long as it's done in a structured way. And we've got a number of different items in our systems to help clients along with that, including templates to help them inform their customers and suppliers and the bank accounts and things like that. But yeah, it's certainly something that can be done.
It's a possibility.
Yeah.
Okay. Just going back to the partnerships, do all the partners have to actually be individual persons?
So, back in the good days, no, they could be anyone. They could be a person, or they could be a body corporate, so a limited company or a trust or something like that. However, in 2014, rules came in that made it a lot more restrictive as to how you distribute the profits of a partnership. So the short answer to your question, Jack, is yeah, you can have limited companies as partners, but the rules are that you can't actually give much to the limited company partners, because the tax rules want all of the money to go down to an individual, which, you know, it's basically them saying individuals pay the higher rate of tax, make the individual pay the tax on the partnership business. There are certain ways you can extract money into limited companies from a partnership, as long as it has a commercial basis, is essentially what it comes down to. So there are options for doing it. And you may see some partnerships that have only limited companies in, because the way that the rules are written are that the profits should be shared to the individuals within the partnership. But of course, if there's no individuals in the partnership, it can't be passed to any of them. So therefore, that's when you might get a fully corporate LLP or partnership. But they are slightly rarer. We do have a few on the books, but yeah, it's a slightly more complicated structure.
I would definitely say, in terms of the accounts department, the number of LLPs with the corporate partners, as we'd call them, so those limited company partners, or LLP partners of an LLP or a partnership, which is also possible, those numbers have definitely decreased drastically since that change in 2014. So whilst we might still see a handful of those types of structures amongst our client base, unless anything changes, I think we could probably say we're not going to see any growth in that area anytime soon. So, okay. Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything in, you know, a reasonable amount of detail there in terms of those four types of structures. So the sole trader, the partnership, the LLP, and the private limited company. So if anyone has got any questions, then by all means you can grab me or Josh for a chat, or just drop us an email and we'll be happy to answer any questions that you've got.
So really, we need to get a podcast email running, don't we? And then people can like and subscribe us.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe we'll add the like option after we've done a couple and have actually improved.
That's it. Yeah, look out for feedback at podcast A4G. No, that doesn't exist. Yeah, so we're going to develop this project as we go through. This is our first one, so please forgive us if we're still finding our feet. But
yes.
We hope it's helpful, and we hope that the format is helpful.
And anyone that would like a cameo or have got any topics that they would like to chat to everyone about, then...
Yeah, we're up for guests on the podcast. You can apply. There'll be an application form provided. But yeah, I'm sure you want to hear some more voices other than Jack and I droning on.
Okay. All right. Cheers, everybody. Speak to you soon.
See you guys next week.